Hi, this is Tom Payne, otherwise known as Jesus from The Walking Dead, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through.
Hey guys, it's Jenna Elfman from Fear the Walking Dead. I play Laura. No, I play Naomi. No, I play June. I play June on Fear the Walking Dead, and you're listening to the Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through on Golden Spiral Media.
That was awesome.
Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through, episode 54. Humbug's Gulch Review.
Welcome to Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to Fear the Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of Fear the Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts.
Hey, survivors, and welcome to another fine episode of Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
I'm Kyle.
And I'm Mark.
And tonight, we will be covering Season 5, Episode 3 of Fear the Walking Dead, titled Humbug's Gulch. But first, before we get started with that, we have some additional feedback for last week's episode. That's Season 5, Episode 2. The Hurt That Will Happen. So let's play Rick and Simon.
We can talk about it. Done talking. Time to listen.
Okay, so we got feedback again from Aaron from the internet. First and foremost, I appreciate Daniel's asking about Madison because while some behind the scenes may have liked to have forgotten, her fans never will. Secondly, I can't fully hate him telling Strand to leave because it's Daniel. But at the same time, you heard the radio and you still won't let him help? There were nice scenes, but I could still only see him as a ratings grab because really, Daniel has no reason to help post-Ophelia.
I don't exactly understand why a simple touch could kill you, but okay. Quicker radiation poisoning, maybe on top of the normal turning. Logically, you'd think they're all doomed now, being in this zone for a long time, but I'm sure they'll magic their way out of it somehow to keep characters around into the franchise.
They continue to struggle with what to do with Luciana, which is a shame as she's free of Nick now, which means we might get badass season 2 Luciana back. I'd give this a 6 because it was definitely not as good as last week's, but still not as horrible as some 4B stuff. On to the podcast.
Daniel is definitely an OG, but because of all Ruben does, I consider him recurring now. He may be in this full season, but I see him as more every few episodes than full season, based again on Ruben's past appearances post season 2. And I'm going to comment on that. I notice this seems to happen a lot on both shows where someone has full-time credits, but they don't appear full-time. And I think that's contractual. So, like, for example, Maggie Grace has been listed in the credits the last two episodes, but she hasn't appeared. And, you know, Ruben was in the credits this episode and he didn't appear. So I think, like I say, that's just kind of a contractual thing, but it seems like they will offer like full-time cast. And that might be, I don't know, some way that they can like amortize the contracts or something. So they might pay less, but because they can offer, you know, 16 episodes or whatever, they get paid, whereas some, like, for example, Star Trek Discovery, There are some people that are on the main credits that don't appear on the main credits every episode. And I imagine that, again, that's contractual. And so they'll get paid more on those episodes that they're credited, and they may not get paid at all when they're not. So I don't know. That's my take on it. It's just a contractual thing.
All right. Well, I'll continue. She says, speaking of Althea, I wonder if we'll see her medical issues back this season. I forgot exactly what her issue is. Was it an insulin thing? But that could crop up the more they find medical supplies taken. Is that maybe part of what happened with the plane? She got lightheaded and it screwed up her control at the moment, or was it a plane issue? We still haven't found out about that yet. Again, it makes me sweat for her, but hopefully she'll make it because, again, she's one of the best new characters currently on. I will say she and Wendell do have interesting plots in that respect, because you don't see a lot of shows where characters worry about medical or accessible issues in settings like these. It's usually magically fixed off screen to progress the story. So I do wonder if we'll see it again, or because her issue is less visible than Wendell's, we will not see hers again to give his status more screen time.
Miss you, butterfly knife. I agree. I miss that.
It's kind of cool.
And she continues on saying, I have to agree. If you expected Daniel not to be a jerk to Strand, you were clearly on the same stuff Luciana is on, because that is like fun time for Daniel pushing Strand's buttons. It was extremely, though, to hear him say he means leave completely because Strand brings nothing but harm to the group he's in. But on the same wave, it completely fits Daniel to hate on him. I feel for Strand, who's really trying to help now, so I look forward to seeing how Daniel's words affect him, and if Alicia can remind him that's not him anymore, because he has left them in the past, but he's here now. Bonus points if they mention Madison. Would love to see Strand take on Daniel for fun, because the more Madison mentions that aren't related to her death, the better.
Grace was good, but given her situation, I'm not going to get too attached to her, because she's definitely one I don't see beyond this season. Had she not gotten poisoning from the radiation, I could have debated her beyond the season as even just a recurring character, but because she's sick, I think she'll go all sacrificial once the toxic zombies are secured, because she doesn't want to become the last one and burden them with cleaning her body up and potentially doing it wrong. Girl, just stay inside. LOL.
That's a good one.
Also, LOL too. I should really ask that question. Oh, well, I'm hungry. LOL. It almost did a spit take with my drink hearing this one. Did you forget the guns in the giant case you brought? You would think that would be high on the list of snatch and grabs when the kids picked them up, or at least take some because the box was possibly broken open. I will say it was clever of them to phrase it as, I saw what you had packed in there. You were ready for Armageddon. Because now they can have anything cooped up to use against them. Well, anything that's high powered, because if that's just a bunch of small firearms, that's going to feel weak to what they've built up.
Even outside of how she acted in the episode, I am sweating Luciana's survival for a multitude of reasons. One, you have a new kids, and outside of Carl, would they kill kids in the franchise? Two, do they realize they can bring her back to season two badass Luciana, because of if they think she's just Nick's girlfriend, basically then yeah, she's going to be one of the high-ups to go. Given how they treated them last season, I'm cautious about the original's handling, and again, if you see her as close enough to an original, she might go. She's already been injured once, so was that a case of, she was injured now, so we won't do it again? This, she survives the season, or is it just foreshadowing by them?
Again, I feel they're going to hold on to Alicia for ratings, if nothing else, and the same with Strand. Plus, He's your go-to comedy, and most fans seem to like John, so he's safe. Morgan is safe because Morgan and June connects to John, so I'm going to miss Dene for sure. This comes up later. But I think she may be an exit this season, unless something major happens with Luciana. But even then, it could be your major deed before exit, too, with this series. I think Luciana and Althea are my biggest two concerns this season because Al is always running off for stories. She has that med condition. She's not romantically connected to anyone for that plot device to keep her around. Alicia is right there, though. Writers, get on that. Okay. And she's popular with fans. Yes, but not to the level arguably John is or June because she's connected to John. So again, very much sweating their survival. I will just say, I don't think you can say that Strand is your go-to comedy guy when you have Sarah and Wendell. Those are your go-to comedy people, but you know, Strand is good for comedy, but I don't think that's his primary.
Yeah.
No, I think he's more for the sarcastic wit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Razor-like wit. Witty repartee. Yeah.
And getting himself into trouble with Daniel.
Yeah.
My style and color. I still remember that.
That was, yeah, from what, season two? Or
season three.
Or season three.
Yeah, coming out of the hospital.
Yep. All right. And again, if they go, I don't know if I can stay because I won't support Alicia and Coleman for sure, as well as some others. But I don't know if the way they're doing Alicia and Strand this season is enough to counteract my dislike for Morgan to the point I want to tune in each week. If they had more screen time and didn't just take everything he said as the best thing ever, I might be more into staying. But as is, it's very much a toss-up if they take out multiple people I like. Given you can watch clips of certain characters online, I could always get my Alicia at least fixed there. So again, what would be the point of watching live if these two OGs I like, but who aren't treated the same as they were originally, because this has become more about, again, these new people, more than the Clarks as the series was kind of a build at the start.
Just because you have a Clark on doesn't mean you're still carrying that aspect of the show with you when you just have her agree with whatever Morgan says, and she only has screen time for cool action moments, essentially, and Strand is just quipped dialogue instead of a character exploration we used to see with him deciding, does he want to be the self-serving guy he thinks he is, or is he better than that as some Clark's thought? It's like her character has no plot without a man, which sucks, because season two Luciana was, again, badass. I'd say, yeah, she flirted with Nick, but he was not her end-all to be-all. In fact, she picked things over him at times because she didn't know him that well, and even if she cared, she felt X was the better option. Again, do the new showrunners see her as her old season 2 self still, or is she just Nick's girlfriend, and without him, to them, she's kind of a filler?
It's a good question, and I would say, like, I'll just read the next sentence because it ties to this. I thought Luciana was in early season 2. She just mainly interacted with Nick at the base her people had when they took him in. Okay, so Luciana came in on season 2, episode 8. And Daniel, of course, left season 2, episode 7. So they never crossed. And so it was in the latter half of the 15-episode season 2. So as far as that's concerned, yeah, that is a good question as far as what is her character, because her character was not defined by being Nick's girlfriend. But for some reason, by the time you know, season 3 and, for that matter, season 4 came along, that seems to be all she was. I mean, she left on her own volition because, if you remember, in season 3, she left Brokejaw Ranch because she couldn't basically live under the roof of racist, you know, people that treated her like a second-class human. And, you know, she left, and somehow she got back. We don't know how that actually happened. And, so her character since then hasn't been defined very well, as we've talked about. But for me, anyway, this episode, she wasn't as annoying. Okay, yeah. So continue with Aaron. And yes, this is all from Aaron. So she was like a scout who found him wandering at the start of season 2. And again, it was season 2, episode 8. So start of season 2B is more accurate. Still, she and Daniel's path didn't cross, really. Nope, they didn't. I think he saw her with the group when Ophelia died, but he doesn't know her name. So he's seen her potentially, but he doesn't know who she is. No, actually, that's not true. Because she hadn't, she was not with the crew when, Daniel and Madison, the rest of them, intersected. So she was basically, the only time we saw her after about episode 5 was in, fantasy sequence. So
yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So she wasn't in the rest of season 3, but she came back in season 4. Continuing, season 3 might be the best season of this series. No argument here. 4B is the worst portion of the series. Dirt in gas doesn't invalidate gas, writers. The season 4 finale was such a white hot dumpster fire and arguably the worst episode ever of this franchise. Possibly the worst thing on TV, or at least in consideration for it. I'd have to go back and look, but I believe I gave that last episode a 6. So I would say it wasn't far off on my estimation. But anyway.
All right. And she continues, we're just never going to find out about that dam.
No, we're not.
Or anything. Like, I kind of just a quick, yeah, I do. And we've talked about before that's like, you know, ever since end of season 3, like, we're never going to get that show back again.
It's a new story and it's a new show.
Yeah. And it's like, even just the premise of this whole show, it's like, I really, we have no idea what this would have been like if Madison was still
around. We want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
All right. And then she goes on to quote, it's like the employees kick ass, but the management just doesn't care. She said, best summary of post-season 3 ever.
Yeah, that was a good one. Laura put in.
Yeah. All the awards for this comment, Laura. For me, what happened to Luciana is simply Nick. They hooked them up in romance, and it's like it became all about him more than her. And what time she did stand up to him, it's like she had to go because, honestly, she was only there for him in the first place. Had it been Alicia or Madison she interacted most with in season 2, she might not have gone to the ranch to begin with them. Season 3 and 4, she has been about Nick more than herself, and it's like they forgot this badass scout we were introduced to in season 2. Luciana has scout skills, writers.
That is true. Yeah, they kind of like just rewrote the character midstream within those seasons. It's really sad, you know. And
curious what Dave Erickson had in store for her. And I'm still really curious why she was kind of written off, but not written off.
It written in limbo, basically.
Yeah.
The character had gumption, had like attitude, and then as soon as Nick became a love interest and everything was centered around him, just like she was saying, they kind of just threw it away come the following season, like in season 4. and all that stuff. Especially with the attack at the border at that time, remember?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
She was very pushing.
Yeah. And yet they kept her around. So it's kind of odd.
Well, they need a red shirt.
Well, if they need a red shirt, they're keeping her around long enough. I mean, they had the red shirt last season with Jimbo.
Well, in this case, this is always the red shirt that just constantly get injured in every episode, it seems. She continues on saying, I don't know if in season 3 it was just a case of she wasn't a focus on top of this not being her idea, so it felt organic when she left him, but she just sadly became a girlfriend, and that's where they've kept her. It's like June. June had things to do outside of John, but once they hooked up, most of her stuff is either with him or talking about him, and I'm just like, can these characters interact with anyone else, please? Then again, I fear if they do it, it'll be a Charlie Alicia situation where they'll force the characters to be a certain way for the plot more than how they would be act, because while Alicia may not have had it in her to kill Charlie at that point, she by no means had to be friends with her. But they pushed that to keep Charlie on for now.
She continues, I'm fine with romances at times on the show. Okay, we're not talking about a Charlie Alicia romance here.
Yes,
I hope not.
And I don't think Aaron is either, but just wanted to clarify that. But they should never be the end-all be-all to the character. It's really annoying when series lock two characters to each other. Sadly, it's usually the female character being held back in some way because of the relationship. It's like they forget you can do 50% of their screen time each week with the interest buddy or lover, but the other 50% they can talk to C, D, X, or even be by themselves contemplating something big that happened last week. Again, June is such a valuable resource. They should make someone train under her in case they need another medic. They're totally wasting that plot, and yes, I know it builds easy drama without her there, but it's also not organic story development, because who in their right mind would let that resource go untapped? Even if they just learn base skills, it's better than nothing. Well, yeah, I agree to a certain extent. You know, that like we see characters like Herschel in the original series, you know, kind of start to train people in, you know, being a medic. And I think Denise and you know,
Carol, he taught Carol.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. But I think Denise did the same kind of thing for, you know, the people in Alexandria. So I agree. But at the same time, I think June's story has been interesting even without considering John. So like, and I, it's not lost on me. I did not like June at first. And I was like you guys with John. I was thinking about that this week. You guys did.
Yeah.
You
we thought he was like, oh, there's something wrong with him.
Yeah. I didn't trust him. I was like, you know, that's funny.
Yeah. But I did not like her, at first in the first half there. I thought she was annoying and reminded me of an ex-girlfriend who broke up with me, but never told me why. You know, yes, I have issues.
We all do.
Yeah. Not the only one.
Yeah. But now that I understand her story, and it's not just because she's teamed up with John, although that's part of it, but I totally buy her character now, and I love those two together. We'll talk about it in a few minutes, but they were fantastic in this episode, I thought. So they're for me one of the big draws to this show right now. So I want to see those two continue on. I don't want them to turn into, you know, like Glenn and Maggie. And
Maggie.
You know.
Yeah.
One of them ends up with a bat.
Yeah. Hopefully.
All right.
Well, I guess we'll see.
So we got one more thing to say, and then we can move on. So go ahead.
All right. She continues. She says, I agree. I can totally see Daniel popping up later to help the group. He's just not going to do it because Strand asked, or was Strand because he doesn't trust Victor at all.
Yeah, I have a feeling he's going to, and he'll do it because of Charlie, our favorite girl. Yes. Our favorite. Well, I think Charlie has been unseated by Annie, Dylan, and wherever the other brother is named, for most annoying children.
Well, there's still more in the original show.
Right. I mean on this show.
Yeah.
All right. Well, again, thank you so much, Aaron. That was a marathon. But thank you so much. Really great feedback. And like I say, we don't normally give it to written feedback, but I'm going to give it to you here, the Showcase Award. Okay. So that's it. But if you want another one, you're going to have to send in a voicemail.
Please.
That's a challenge. Anyway, okay. Season 5, Episode 3 of the Fear the Walking Dead is titled Humbug's Gulch, written by Ashley Cardiff. And I looked her up, and her credits are for two shows, Fear, of course, for this season, and Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce, which I've heard of, but I've never seen. I don't think that show's on anymore, but that's what her other credits are from. Directed by Coleman Domingo, and of course, that's Strand, or should I say he plays Strand, and he directed, I don't remember the name of it, last season, but episode 12. He's, of course, a playwright and director of stage, and he's now director of TV.
I think he did really well with this episode. I was really happy with it.
Yeah, that episode he did last season was titled Weak, as in,
you're worthless and weak.
But it wasn't. All right, so we got a description from AMC.com. June and Dory take shelter to hide from a threat, but a misunderstanding with a desperate survivor leads to trouble. Double shot. Alicia and Morgan face a dangerous obstacle.
It's a trap!
All right, Mark, what did you give Humbug's Gulch?
I gave it 9.5 Morgan's New Fence Pipe Bow Staffs.
And I gave it, and you guys are going to probably, yeah, we'll have more to talk about this. I gave it a 7.6 Endless Walkie-Talkies and Gasoline.
Yes, we are a split vote this week because I also love this episode, quite simply. I loved it. 9.5 San Antonio Splits. But I could also say 9.5 Spaghetti Walker Westerns.
That's good. And just to preface it, it's not that I didn't enjoy this episode, but we'll continue on, and that's what affected my rating. Not that I didn't enjoy it, it was just parts of it.
You do not have to justify it, because definitely it wasn't universally loved. So,
well, I enjoy watching the show. So it's like, I don't want it to be like, oh, I just hated it. I'm like, No.
A 7.6 does not tell me that you hated it. Just tells me that you didn't love it.
I don't think I've ever rated the show this low before.
Really?
Maybe.
What'd you give it last week? Wasn't it a 7.5?
No, wasn't it an 8?
Oh, maybe that's right. An 8.2.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't gone below 8 on so this season, at least.
Somehow, I think you did last season, though.
Yeah, last season there was a couple, but I don't think I've gone this low. But anyways.
All right, so we have some listener ratings, Mark.
Well, Alex from New Jersey gives basically a questionable emoji. First impressions, 8 out of 10, never trust kids in the zombie apocalypse that live by themselves.
That is a good observation.
Then, after a rewatch, 8.5 out of 10.
Yeah, because it kind of becomes like a Lord of the Flies kind of
thing. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, Steve from Oklahoma City gives it a 9.5 out of 10 wrong minivans.
And we had been crediting the wrong place. I thought she had moved, and it was true. I talked to her last night. Dieta from Detroit. So, originally from Detroit, moved away. Now she's back in Detroit. Hi, Dieta. She gives it 7 out of 10 gunfights at the OK Corral. So she agrees with you, basically.
And LT from NC gives it, I'll give this one 8.5 out of 10 high noon showdowns, or for a few walkers more, just to go along with the theme of the episode.
Yeah, I should have grabbed some spaghetti western music.
Yeah. All right, and then our last one is Glynis from Toronto. Give it a 9 out of 10 wild, wild west walkers, or brothel is just soup.
You know, I totally missed that on, like, I'd say the first 4 watches.
Really?
Oh, really?
Well, I didn't clue into the joke.
Well, it's like broth was like in like bold lettering, and an L was like very small or
totally missed cursive. It. Totally missed it. Then I was like, oh, is that what he means?
That's funny.
Yeah. All right. Like, I saw the lettering, but I didn't put two and two together that broth is soup. All right.
Well, try the clam chowder.
All right, let's move on to awesome sauce.
Awesome sauce!
So Steve from Oklahoma City says, the San Antonio split. Loved it. I especially love that John said it was only the second time he was successful at it. And I do agree.
And to me, that sold it, because I was getting ready to roll my eyes, and then when he finally said that, I'm like, okay, this wasn't a thing that he wasn't like a superhero. You know, he wasn't like, what's his name? With the arrows.
Hawkeye. Or Arrow from Green Arrow. Yeah, Arrow. Yeah.
You know, he wasn't like that. He's really good, but this was a fluke, you know?
All right. Our next listener's awesome sauce comes from Dieta from Detroit. John and June's gunfight with the dead, and of course, the tumbleweed blowing in the wind.
LT. Nice touch. Yeah. LT from NC has a few here. He says, the John-June exchange about the brothel sign. The way John saved Dwight in the classic Western showdown on Main Street. Suddenly, Dwight. I think that refers to Dwight and Morgan meeting. I'm not sure.
I think so.
Maybe when Dwight suddenly shows up, puts the gun to John's head.
Okay,
maybe that's what he means. I don't know. When John said it's IE, not Y, during the introduction while Dwight was tied up, you guys called it, since Morgan is now sporting what looks to be a fence post of a survey marker, or maybe he tied the rag on the end of it for some reason.
Glynis from Toronto says, John and June shooting them up in a faux Western town, especially that San Antonio split. Humbug. Finally, Dwight makes his dramatic appearance. A little similar to pointing a gun to Daryl's head in TWD and the woods in season 6, episode 15, East. The walkers in the episode seem to be extra well done makeup effects wise. Greg Nicotero outdid himself in this episode, and I do agree. They looked awesome in it.
Yep.
All right. Our next is Alex from New Jersey. John and June are amazing together. Their playful banter makes the rest of this worth watching. I did love the backdrop of the Western town, and John showing off his gun skills was fun to watch, but it was a little weak sauce on the splitting the bullet shot. But that is a San Antonio split. I think it's awesome, but not sure yet. Getting Dwight on the show, his whole storyline is a little far-fetched for me, but I'm rolling with it like tumbleweeds.
All right, that goes to our awesome sauces. So, Mark, what sauce-i do you have for us?
Well, I have a bunch. So, first one would be, I find it awesome that we get to find that John Dory was involved with a Western theme park and was the trick shooter. Something that I secretly thought from when we first saw him in season 4, episode 1.
Now I have to remind you, Mark, this is not new information. Because this is something that he told June when he thought she was Laura in season 4, episode 5. I believe he explained like the guns and how he got them and where they were from and all that stuff. He may have mentioned it to Morgan too. I don't think so. I think it was mentioned in the Laura episode, though. So, like, I already knew that he worked at a Western theme park and was basically a trick shooter.
Trick shooter, yeah.
Yeah. So,
but it was fun.
No, I know.
Yeah, I know.
But you weren't the only one that forgot about this. So, it is worth saying, though, that it was part of his backstory already. This wasn't an addition.
My next would be, obviously, the San Antonio trick shot. I have to agree with everybody else. That was amazing.
It was.
Finally seeing Dwighty Boy. We finally get Dwighty Boy. The element of the West within the theme park with the Zeds front and the tumbleweeds. The effect made me feel that Fear the Walking Dead met Westworld for a bit, as well as Deadwood, which Garrett Dillahunt was in. The Western music was awesome in the episode. Painted the episode well with the scenes with June, Dwight, and John Dory. I thought that I didn't get a chance to really look up who actually did the music, but to me, that really captivated me and put me in the scenes when they actually filmed that.
It was the same duo that does the music for this show the last two seasons. I have to look up their names, but. But yeah, they've been on it for a while.
Yeah. The next bit would be Morgan wielding a new bow staff. Obviously a piece of fence, a support pipe probably from a fencing, which leads to believe where we spoke about last week when the radiation will infect like the wood and everything else with that. This could be wiped down or cleaned or whatnot.
Yep, not porous. Right. That we know of. All right. Well, my awesome sauce, and I'm sure some of you might think that I'm like bipolar by the latter end of this. John and June together in an episode. It's like when they are the main focus of an episode, I feel like it's usually the best episode of the season. And it's just like, I love their interaction together.
Oh, same here.
All right. Well, I just have, we already kind of talked about it, but I'll just say, I was not exactly looking forward to Dwight coming on the show. I thought it was going to be too unbelievable, too far-fetched. But now that he's here, he seems like a perfect fit. And
oh, definitely.
I really love how he fits into the theme of this season. He is on a redemption arc. He needs to make up for the things he did as a savior. The things he did to Daryl, of course, and the rest of the, survivors that we know in Alexandria, killing Denise, all that stuff. And, he needs help to find, Sherry, so it is something that, I think that it really fits well with the season. So I was very skeptical when it was first announced, but now that he's here, man, I really dug him in this episode. And I loved how he didn't, you know, first meet up with
Morgan.
He first met up with the two people that I think would have been most willing to help him, John and June, and how they could kind of, I mean, think about it. They were the ones that had to meet him. I think, you know, they're the ones that could sympathize the most with him, you know, people that fell in love that got separated and were lucky enough to find each other again. And I think they really, were sympathetic to him. And I thought that, Austin Emilio's, portrayal in this episode was really good. I thought he really sold his character well. So definite, awesome sauce to Austin Emilio. And for that matter, like I said, I was very skeptical about this. I just, when I first heard this, it really gave me a sour taste in my mouth, but I was definitely wrong.
It was a nice fit for the fact that when towards the end of last season of Fear the Walking Dead, well, not Fear, the Walking Dead in what, season 8?
Yeah.
He was on his way to redemption, but he was just cast out by Daryl. So he felt like, all right, I helped you guys out. And then he's just shucked off. Now he's all alone. So it kind of fit within the writing and how they did this. And I think they wrote it in very well as far as the people who did take him in, just like you said.
And he really needed a fresh start. I mean, I don't know if he ever would have fully been accepted in with everyone else after, you know, the war's over. So I think certainly Daryl, but, you know, for that matter, Tara. Oh my God, I almost forgot her name. That's bad.
So soon?
I want to call her Alana. I'm like, okay, well, that's actually the actress's name. Anyway, Tara was still pretty upset with him, I think. And, you know, they may have temporarily given him a reprieve, but that's, you know, not to say that they would have, you know, completely forgiven him. So he had to go. And I would say, I don't think Morgan had to go. Morgan had to go because he decided that's what he needed to do. But I don't think he needed to. But I think Dwight, almost won't call him Daryl, needed to. And so anyway, skeptical as I was, it works for me. All right, let's move on to the week variety.
You're worthless and weak.
Indeed.
Yes. And Dieta from Detroit says, the San Antonio split. What the hell? Comical trickery gag was that. Raise the axe up high and hold it still while Walker is chomping at your face. Smack my head emoji, female emoji, smack my head emoji, female emoji. Come on, Fear the Walking Dead writers. Yeah, it was nice and all, but this is not the show for it.
I know some people had a hard time with this, and I get that, but I think it was sold to the extent because we've already seen that John is an amazing shot, and we know that this, you know, he was a trick shooter. And he might even been doing it full time. I don't know if he quit being a cop completely or if he was just doing it on the side for years. But anyway, you know, this was something he excelled at. So for him to do this incredible feat while chances of it were pretty slim, I did buy it. I was able to suspend my disbelief, but not everybody could, I think. All right.
Yeah.
She's got one more, though.
Yep. Seeing Dwight pop up on the scene was nice, but that hold up the axe thing was a bit much.
Kind of agree.
You're wrong. No. No, I don't want to be that guy.
No, it's all good.
It's all subjective. I bought it.
Totally.
But you didn't, and that's okay. Both are valid.
Sometimes you have to suspend your disbelief, so. And it is a show, and it is fantasy, so that's how I believe it. And I enjoyed it.
Yep.
All right. Well, our next listener's weak sauce comes from Steve from Oklahoma City. And he says, Dwight should be smart enough to check VINs. Also, I'm not a cop, and I would have checked the VIN.
Yeah.
Can't really complain about that.
More on this in a minute or two.
Okay.
Alex from New Jersey, he makes a very valid point here. He says, simple. Don't go after kids in the apocalypse ever. These kids are cray-cray, but they are, without a doubt, the smartest people in the Walking Dead universe. They string up zombies like we go for milk. Just leave and keep going. Let them die. I'm all about saving people, but Alicia, give it up and move on.
It's the kids.
Yeah. Got a bunch of Wesley crushers. It seems. All right. Mark, what do you have for weak sauce?
Well, I found it weak that after Morgan and Dwight talk, they kind of shuck off what happened to them on the Prime show, you know, and the actual regular Walking Dead. You would think Alicia and the rest would ask, what happened to his face and why there was an uncomfortable silence between them for a moment?
I tend to think we're going to get this next week, but your points are valid. I did notice that too, but you know, one thing I picked up on a possible, I don't know, this is crazy, but if Sherry doesn't end up together, and you know, I'll say this first, sorry, Aaron, could Alicia and Dwight hook up?
Ugh. That would be weird.
Yeah.
Like, hold on, I got a young chick here. She digs my scars.
Oh, jeez.
That would be a little too Negan-esque.
All right, Kyle, what do you have?
All right. Well, so, okay, this is why my rating went down this week. I really liked the episode and I enjoyed it, but I feel like kind of from this point on, I'm just going to have to suspend disbelief with everything about this show. And I think I've made this comment before in the past.
Yes, you have.
Yes. So basically, like, it just bugs me. It's like they have unlimited gas and power so that way they can talk to everybody on the walkies like all season long, no matter what the distance is. And they can just jump in a car and hightail it, you know, to meet wherever they are. You know, it's like, did they bring a bunch of like buttload of extra batteries with them on the plane that crashed? You know, it's like they got those, but they forgot the weapons. I just think it's very convenient for the writers that our characters can talk to each other all the time without having to be near each other.
Yeah, unless they can't.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Like, I guess as I kept watching the show, though, it just, you know, it's like, to me, it just feels very, like, that's not something that you, that's finite, you know? It's just like, you have that for so long, so, like, to be talking on it constantly, and then, like, with the kids, and then, like, even Dwight, they left it in the car, and, oh, they can communicate with him in the car. It kind of takes me out of it all. I don't know. I mean, it's like, also, it's kind of like they always seem to have an extra car lying around when they smash up the ones they have. It has like a full tank of gas and all. The next part was like the kids are the ones tying up the walkers. I mean, it's like, come on, half the time anyone in this world confronts a walker, they trip, they fall down and almost get eaten, or they have to be saved like at the last minute. But no, these kids, they like have these skills that they can wrangle every walker that they see. You know, it's like, and they just like disembowel them and tie them up like where this We Are the World Congo line. Just that whole scene, I was like, how did those kids manage to do that? Like, really, with the two of them, not the young one, because I don't see how they could have controlled a walker. Like, we've never seen anybody with those kind of skills. The other weak part. Go on.
No, I would just say, yep.
All right. I mean, okay, this one, I like, after the fact, like you were talking about, like when John made the comment saying, oop, that's the, I've only made that one other time or whatever, but it was like the trick shot. It was just, to me, it was like, it was pure theatrics for no other purpose than for him just to do it. It's not that I didn't like it, but I was just like, come on.
Well, I mean, think that they did it because, you know, we've already had this kind of setup that he was this trick shooter at, you know, a Western, ranch, so to speak. So if he's a trick shooter, he's got to do a trick shot, right? So,
But then he could have just ran over there and then took the walkers out, or Dwight could have gotten up. I mean, I get it, but it's like you wasted, or like you spent so much time to like set up the shot, and if you missed, Dwight is dead. So that's a risk that I don't understand.
I admittedly thought that was the case, that he was it could have been done. I loved it, but I do agree with you, it could have been done in a much easier way. Like, he could have shot one of the walkers and, you know, done hand to hand, you know, like butt of the gun, like June did with the other. Mm-hmm. So right. Yeah, I agree with you on that point. Like, I loved it for what it was.
I know, I did too.
It was really cool. But yeah, I get your point.
Yeah. It just took me out of the, it just takes me out of the whole like world that I am like kind of wanting to see, or I feel like that should be a part of it. So it was just like, not that it wasn't cool, because yeah, it was really, really cool, but it was like, yeah, okay.
So was he Six Gun Sam when he tried to do that before, or are the theatrics something else?
good question.
All right, well, let's,
I would
let's,
hope so.
You've got another.
Yeah, well, it's just, I just feel like the Fears zombie apocalypse setting is just that. It's just not about our group facing any challenges with being like low in resources and how they adapt to that. To me, it feels like it's just like playing a Resident Evil game that you have the code for full health and full ammo. So no matter, you know, about the survival part, you're just cruising along and to, you know, on by just to see the special effects and then moving right along to the next stage because, yay, you can just do it.
Well, so, yeah, but now we have radioactive walkers, which does sound like Resident Evil.
Yes. but like, I can put that aside and, you know, I can watch the story that they're going to be taking on, you know, with us. And I think for me, it's just like, I have to let that go because it's really affecting me in the way that's like, I'm now having a zero investment in these characters. So when one of them dies, it's not like I've kind of been taken out of it that I just don't, it's not like I don't feel like I'm going to be very impacted. Like, even if it's like some big, huge, spectacular death, I'm just going to be like, eh, okay. You know, so you know, again, I liked this episode. It was a lot of fun, you know, this and that. But I think that part of it, I think I was just expecting too much, or I was looking deeper than I feel like the show really is going to even go there. So I just kind of have to just put that aside and be like, well, of course they're going to have gas. Of course the walkie-talkies don't go out, or maybe at some point they do. And I'll be like, okay, well, then why did it take so long?
Well, it's also worth saying that if they are where I think they are in the timeline, they are still between season 8 and season 9 of The Walking Dead. And they pretty much lost the ability to use anything with engines in season 9. And that was so, like, if it follows to that, in the next, you know, like, based on what Dwight said, he said about a year. So assuming that if a year of the 18 months has passed, then sometime in the next 6 months, cars should stop running. So at least in theory.
Yeah. No, we've had those discussions in past seasons where it was just like, you know, gas doesn't last forever. You know, it does go bad. And
right.
Well, so anyways, that was
unless you're in Texas and you have a refinery.
And, you know, that's not to say that there's not like big storage. I don't know. But, you know, of course, we don't ever get to see that. And it just seems like every car on the side of the road just happens to be like, oh, yeah, here's a car at the campground. Oh, it's got a 3/4 of a tank.
You know, like, I will say this, as problematic as the gas is to me, what is more problematic is the fact that every car's battery still works.
Yeah,
you totally. Know, because, like, for example, this past week, I had to put air in my tires, and I was using, I have a portable air pump that I have a problem with one of my tires that I have to keep giving it air every couple of days. And I gave it some air while it was pumping gas, and when I went to start the car, my car wouldn't start.
He's drained the battery.
Yeah, basically the air pump drained the battery, and I had to get a jump start. So that tells me that, like, gas, yes, gas should stop working, but to me, battery should stop working first, and for that matter, air should go out of tires. So I would expect to see a lot more flat tires. But with all that, of course, we have to say,
what is this bizarre segue that's happening right now? Can we maybe stay on point?
Yes, let's move on.
Yep.
Or do you want to? Do you want to keep fighting on this?
No. I just
gas. I how they use the gas all the time.
No, I've put out my thoughts and my feelings. So throughout the rest of this season, I will be bringing this up again.
All right. We'll hold you to this.
Okay.
I also expect an awesome sauce when the gas doesn't work. Okay. So I'm going to hold you to this. Anyway.
All right.
My main thing, and this was kind of mentioned, I think, was it Steve mentioned it? But I did lose some on the episode because of, doesn't Dwight know how to check a VIN? Like, I don't know. Like, and I brought this up on a group that Mark and I belong to. Okay, I worked for a tire wholesaler for 14 years. So I was all about the VIN. I knew about VINs and, you know, warranty process and how this car could look like this car, but their VINs could be different. What a VIN tells you about the car, tells you like where it's made, when it's made, all that kind of stuff, what's on the car. But it's easy enough to check a VIN. And so I thought, it's like, Dwight, wouldn't you check the VIN? Did you really need John as a cop to check the VIN? You know, because the part that really lost me is when Dwight asked him, are you sure? And it's like, dude, it's a VIN. Check the damn VIN yourself. This is not rocket science. I know he was an ex-cop, but this is not a cop skill that you need to check a VIN. I'm sorry. So that was one thing. Another little thing that really got me is I watched this episode, of course, on the AMC app. I think the first time I watched it was on my Roku. So it was the AMC app on my Roku, but I may have also done it on my phone. But I clicked the episode, first play. I don't know that Dwight is going to appear this episode. What's the image that I see? Dwight. So I can't even like start the episode before I see Dwight. Oh, Dwight's in this episode.
Oh, wow. I didn't see that on mine.
No?
No.
Maybe it was on the Roku version.
I have Apple TV.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
That could be.
It could be just on there, or because I also watched it once or twice on my computer. And I thought maybe once. Yeah, I definitely did watch it once on my phone. And I did see it there. But, you know, maybe that's an Apple TV thing. Maybe Apple and its, you know, infinite wisdom said, oh, you really don't want to see this image.
Yeah, I saw Alicia with the walkie.
Okay. Well, that's
and
good.
And that was it.
Okay.
Huh.
Well, anyway, I was spoiled because of a stupid image. That's my week. Although it is a weak sauce. All right, let's move on to the what variety.
What?
Well, Steve from Oklahoma City, the kids are the ones stringing up the dead? How is that even possible? How did they get those heads up on the billboard?
It's not true. That's impossible.
So many questions. And he says, so many questions concerning this reveal that it was almost a weak sauce for me. So.
I should have played that a sentence before, by the way. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I have some more to say about that in a minute.
Same here. I think I have some.
We both do. Okay.
Thoughts.
Okay.
All right. Well, our next listener's Watt Sauce comes from LT from Mincy. So the kids are the ones who strung up all those walkers? I guess it is good to have a hobby, but I want to know why.
Yeah, they took up knitting and suddenly braiding. They know how to sew walker trails. Guts together.
All right. Luciana and Al, the buddy cop show we really didn't want. the exploding tire after running over a nail. That was a bit much for me. Well, that and suddenly losing control and wrecking in a spectacular fashion. Did everyone in the apocalypse miss the day of driver's ed? Since the last shot was of the board with the nails in it, still upright, did Morgan miss the board? Or was the wrecker just more puncture resistant?
Yeah, now you say that, I didn't notice that, LT, but now I think about it, it's like, yeah, they kind of tipped it over, but they didn't exactly move it out of the way.
Actually, the second time I on my rewatch, like, it crossed my mind being like, because she put it back basically, so it was still sticking up, and I'm like, wouldn't you throw that across, like, throw it off the road? It was just like, yeah, it was like, huh? And he goes on and says, did they get the walkie and the charger out of the van before they left town? How is it the kid's walkie has a charge left? Good question. The look on Morgan's face when Dwight walked up. I want to see how that plays out. I know Morgan wants to be all about second chances, but props to Lenny for selling the "so where did you come from" look at the first part of that scene.
Yep. All right. Mark, what do you have for what sauce?
Was with the windstorm only concentrated within the Western theme park and not when we see Luciana, Alicia, and Morgan. Or let alone Wendell, Sarah, Strand, or anybody else. Or, well, I don't really care about Charlie.
We didn't see them. Well, okay, so I'll preface this by saying, you know, I've never lived in Texas, and we don't know even what area of Texas they're in right now. We know they're not near Nacogdoches because that's where that's where John was from, or at least that's where his little gulch was. So I can't speak to that. However, I do know about how weather can like travel in storm bands. So I've seen this here in Tampa. Like, for example, it will be raining here. And where I work in the next zip code, it is sunny, and this happens a lot. And I'm also familiar with this weather pattern in Cleveland. That's basically how lake effect snow works. So you get these bands of snow where it's like dumping on you, and then 5 miles over, it's not snowing at all. So again, not from Texas. Don't know if this is actually valid in Texas, but this would explain what we saw.
Yeah. And I can actually say, at least from my experience in Oklahoma, I mean, we don't know how the distance, at least on that map, and like what they were tracking, you know, like circling. So I don't know how far Laura and June John and June were, because when they were driving away, Morgan was saying like, you know, like, oh, I think you're getting out of range.
Yeah, but your point?
No, my point is that
your point,
like,
about the walkies having this like virtually unlimited range until they suddenly don't.
Yeah,
but well,
but
taken.
I mean, again, it's like distance. Like, yeah, it's like in Oklahoma, like you, you can see like where, say, a storm's coming through that's just pouring down rain, but then you're standing in the sun.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there can be little, like, it could have been a microburst or something that would just start
going
crazy.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah. Kind of like Kansas, where you could actually see
like a storm in front,
like a tornado just show up and it's like a mile down the road.
Yeah.
And you don't feel anything.
Yeah. So basically, depending on where we are in Texas, it could potentially make a lot of, this could be typical weather pattern. Like Oklahoma, how far are you away from Texas where you grew up? It's like a few hundred miles, a couple hundred miles, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Not that
about
far.
About a 3-hour drive to Dallas.
Yeah. Not even 200 miles. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's possible, but I mean, Texas is a big place, so I don't think the weather is the same all through the state. Kyle,
all my weak sauce is my Watt sauce.
Yeah. So are we to believe that this is the part that I'm really confused about? So it's the kids that are doing all these like guts tied together thing and, you know, stringing them up across the road. That's all them? Or are they just imitating somebody?
I think it's all them.
Yeah. That's my take on it too. Hmm. But are they also doing the severed heads?
That's the question.
Because,
big question.
Like, that's the thing. Like, the tying up the walkers, I could see them doing it. Why they would do it? Other than Lord of the Flies, I don't see any reason for it. But the severed heads, to me, that seems to me a little bit, maybe not, because especially two little kids and mm-hmm. a girl that can't be more than 14.
Yeah.
I have some problems believing that they're severing heads, putting them up in a tree like 20 feet high. That doesn't sound like kids to me. So
that sounds even more above and beyond what even just if they can tie walkers together and do it on the ground. I don't see them climbing up and then hanging the heads.
My next question though is like, okay, so what's their MO? Like what are they trying to accomplish here?
To scare off anybody else to invade their area.
That's what it seems like. That's what it seems like to me.
The sister said something. I forgot her name already. She said that at the very that last scene was just like, we don't want them, you know, we want to scare them or something because we don't want them ever coming after us again.
So the next question I would have is this area around the nuclear plant where all the radioactive walkers are. Is it within that that perimeter? Or is it outside that perimeter?
Right. I don't know.
I'm thinking it's outside.
I think so. Probably bordering it or something. But I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe they're trying to keep people away that have been in that area.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But for that matter, the evil kid gang again, we're seeing this again. Like, is Dylan Charlie 2.0? I mean, are they going to basically fall for the same gag again? You know,
yeah.
Is Dylan like Kevin McAllister
like, of the zombie apocalypse?
Well, not just Dylan, but the other two. Like, are they basically three Kevin McAllisters? Like, we'll find out that their last name is McAllister or something.
Yeah, it's Home Alone in the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. Yep. And a what sauce, but I definitely did notice that John did a double take when Dwight said, you know, look out, walkers. He's like, what did you call them? So I happened to notice that.
I don't think that was the first time that he heard that, but I think Morgan stated that when he first met.
Well, John. Yeah, that's why he did a double take, because he recognized that term from Morgan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why
he had to put two and two together.
Right, right. That he kind of went, huh.
No, well, that's a neat little, neat little insight. I took it as he was like, oh, like you, that's what you call them?
Yeah.
Not thinking about Morgan.
All right. So we didn't get any listener sad sauce, but we have our own. So let's move on to that. Aww. Mark.
Yeah, well, they got me to feel sad for Dwight. The acting actually made me feel for the character and the devotion to find Sherry.
I agree, Mark. I definitely agree with this. And I even found myself when he was telling the story, I shed a tear or two. Not this is a shock. But I felt the pain that Dwight had felt, you know, at that moment, like trying to search for, you know, like so many dead ends. And I'm sure he's been through hell in that year trying to find her. And, you know, finally he finds this car that he said that he'd been searching for months. And, you know, it turns out to be John and June driving this car. And, you know, he actually tries to, you know, kill him. You know, either trying to find out what happened to her or trying to avenge her death or something. And of course, you know, they tell him that they got it at the camp, and we all know what happened at the camp. It's like anyone that had been at the camp had died. But, you know, I was kind of iffy on Dwight, but now that he's in fear, and I think this is kind of, I was feeling for the character more and more as he was on The Walking Dead, and, you know, especially him like turning over to the other side and getting leaked that it was him, and, you know, by, what's her name, Paula, I think. But anyway, I now am fully invested in his character, and I wanted to sing.
Oh, that was awesome. Awesome.
You continue, Mark. I kind of stole yours, but you had another one.
Well, I'll be sad to see Luciana go, because with that speech, she was so hopeful. She made Talisha just points more and more to me that she'll be gone soon. She's being way too optimistic.
Now, I was like, when I first read this in the notes, I'm like, huh? Do you know something? Because you're like, I'll be sad to see her go. I'm like, wait a minute. But
anytime we see these characters, they say something hopeful. What happens? They die.
She's turning into the moral compass, and we know what happens to the moral compass. So, yeah, I kind of got to go with that. All right, Kyle, you also had some point here. I think that was fits into ours.
Yeah, like just that was my kind of my awe sauce was with, you know, Dwight. The Morgan and Dwight meetup, like it just left me wanting so much more. Because it just felt like, you know, it was like we were like meeting up with an old friend that we haven't seen forever. Just kind of the way it felt. And then Morgan seemed to, you know, he seemed to just let things pass, you know, like basically the past be the past. But then watching the group see his reaction to him, you know, it's like meeting someone else from Morgan's previous world. You know, I don't want to go further. It's just, you know, it's kind of like they must have a million questions, or hopefully we do get to see those million questions. But it was like just basically the whole Morgan Dwight thing. It's like when, yeah, Morgan saw Dwight and he said his name, it was like, aw.
You mean, all right, well, and we already basically gave my awesome. So let's move on to feedback.
We can talk about it. Done talking. Time to listen.
All right, well, we only got one voicemail this time around, and it's from our good friend Steve.
Hello, Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. This is Steve, and I have a couple quick notes on Humbug's Gulch. I will admit, the multiple plot lines thing is a little heavy for the season, that they're throwing a lot of things up against the wall, it seems. But I'm still loving the season. John Dory had a from the hip shot. I don't know if anybody else noticed that and loved it. Dwight shoots one of the walkers that Dwight shoots is walking up behind one of those cardboard cutout things that you take pictures of, like at those towns, and like the head is cut out and you see the walker's head just above the cutout. I thought that was a cool, cool shot. And, you know, we don't know what's going on at the Denim Factory or with our truckers or with Matt Frewer. Reuben Blades was in the credits, but not in the episode. And I know a lot of people seem to be not enjoying the season or crapping on this season for a lot of reasons. And I'm not sure why, because wasn't it the return, or it was Fear, embracing the comic book aspects of this universe that I thought most people loved last year. And that's what we're seeing this season. And so that's just my thought on it. I'm loving it and can't wait to hear what you guys thought. Talk to you later.
Well, thank you so much, Steve. And of course, all right. So, did anyone else see this hip shot? I guess I kind of missed that.
Yeah. No,
same here.
I didn't see it at all either.
I will have to go back and look.
Yeah. Same.
And I just had a point, you know, not knowing about like Strand and Daniel and for that matter, we still don't know about Al. I have a feeling we won't know about Al for a couple more episodes, but, it's the same kind of gimply, you know, selective characters in the episode kind of thing, you know, that we've been seeing on both shows. And for that matter, we saw some of this on the other show, or this show, I said the other show, this show, before, you know, the Gimple era, or as, I think Aaron said, and I think someone else said it last week, the takeover era. Might have been Laura. Yeah, I think Laura said it. But yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of mixed on that format. I like it more how Game of Thrones did it, you know, in past seasons anyway. I'm very mixed to negative on season 8, but in past, you know, how we'd like get a little smattering of each character, you know, most episodes. You know, one episode or two, you might not see them, but, you know, most episodes you will. And I kind of like that format versus what we're seeing here. And that's a longstanding gripe that I've had about it. But we've been seeing most of the characters. We just aren't seeing all of them. So they're not like little one character or two character stories. We're seeing, you know, maybe 2/3 of the characters and not seeing, you know, the other third. So at least in the first, in episode 2 and 3, and I imagine episode 4 is going to be the same. So, all right, that's it for our voicemails. So let's move on to written feedback. Mark?
Yeah, Dieta from Detroit. She says, so are those kids related to the kids that terrorized Michonne and Daryl? Because their skill set is pretty much on that level.
Yes, it is.
And she goes, I can't believe they are ones wandering around these woods, tying up walkers and hanging heads up on trees. We've already went over this. Yeah, it's kind of wacky. Why does the apocalypse turn kids into demon spawn?
Because it's a hard life.
Yeah,
yeah, you know, exactly.
It's true. It's like you have Lizzie from season,
yeah,
you know, season 4 of The Walking Dead, you know, she was a demon seed. And it's true. This seems to be a constant thing we've seen.
Yeah, and it's like a Macaulay Culkin review of his movies. You know, you got Home Alone, and then you got The Good Son. She continues on saying, what is the purpose of all the Cloak and Dagger games? I agree. What is this? Are they trying to protect their camp from people invading and taking over? And of course, are people want to help save everybody, even if they say, no, we good, leave us alone. Those kids said numerous times, you can't help us. just leave them alone and go back and get your denim factory back, or did they forget about that situation? I don't think they did. It's just they're concentrating their efforts at certain intervals at this point, you know, with, if you look at John and June, they set out forth to look for the kids. And I think the same for Alicia, and they kind of got sidetracked. And then we got Sarah and Wendell still standing around doing nothing. And, you know, what? Strand is on his own too. So, and where's Charlie? That was my question. but regardless, everybody's on their own mission at this point, and the denim factory seems to not be a concern because of, you know, Max Headroom is taken over. But
Max Headroom is taken over.
She continues on saying, I just had a thought, or so our people find a plane and decide to fly said plane to go help somebody who tricked them into leaving their camp unattended, which they lost now. They are chasing kids through the woods to try to help them. Smack my head emoji, female emoji, smack my head emoji. Stop it completely. Didn't they learn anything from Crazy Lady Martha? I agree. Yeah, she was a bit crazy.
Yes, she was.
I think that's her name, she says. That is true. It was Martha. I just feel like this group is too trusty. I just don't get this season or last season. Our group spends more time chasing ghosts / people instead of trying to create a safe community to live in. They are never organized and are always separated, or someone is lost or abducted. We still don't know who took Al and why. And are the kids on it? And where the hell are the truckers and Charlie? Well, she took the words out of my mouth. I think they're still looking, hanging by, drinking their beer that tastes like, what was it, vinegar?
Vinaigrette.
Strand trying to convince Daniel to use his plane so he can rescue the group from wherever they are, because we know they are not still at the crash site anymore because they've been chasing kids through the woods. Question, how is Strand going to find them? Even if he does manage to get the plane, what is he going to do, fly around until he thinks he sees them? Yeah, they're going to hold flares. Why can't they just drive back, or Strand drive to them? Did they fly that far? I hate to say it, but this show is losing its steam, in my opinion. Too much of nothing going on. Nothing is making any sense. The stories aren't flowing or connected. Smack my head. I just don't know anymore. Smack my... I don't know the emojis.
I think that's like meh or whatever or something, or like, okay.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I don't get it.
Seattle, you bring up a good point. Like, maybe a plane isn't the right thing, but I know what might be.
Get to the chopper!
I think Strand, like, I think he knows where the truck stop is, because that's where they were headed. So maybe, you know, that's where they were going when they were flying, but they just crashed the plane.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess he has an idea of where they are, but again,
I wish that they would like define this. Like, did Al Thea know how to fly the plane? Did Strand know how to fly the plane? Like, or did they just, like, you know, play flight simulators?
They got a PlayStation 2 flight.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, no, that's the question, because Strand had to go out and clear the runway, and that's why he, you know, supposedly didn't get on the plane.
Right.
So he probably was, not that I knew that he knew that, but I guess he did. And Al was like, no, I just like, you know, using my camera to record people's stories. Push a button.
Yeah.
I took a course.
I know how to fly this plane, but I want to see you fly the plane. So I'm going to record it.
Greg, and then I'll rewatch the recording. And
my name's Eugene, and I played so many flight simulators, I think I could do it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll continue. Our next viewer feedback is from Todd from Ohio, and he says, now that was a San Antonio split. I love this one being a Dory deep dive between him and June, and I didn't expect Dwight to hit our show this early, but I think they explained his appearance fairly well. Agreed. I'm glad we got that recognition that he and Morgan knew each other from the same place. They could have ended the episode with just that story for me. Nothing really to say about the Alicia Morgan Luciana story. In my humble opinion, they are cruising for a bruising with this idealistic, we are out here to help. I think we can already see how that's not going to work out. It means it's good to have hope, but to go all in to be naive and set yourself up for the inevitable blindside is a bit ridiculous. I was enjoying this episode until those stupid kids turn out to be the secret bad guys. Did they buy it? Yes, we did. Those forking shirt holes. We will never forgive you, jerks. I like that saying. That's funny.
Yeah. And probably worth saying, you know, that they could have joined up with the rest of them and it would have been good, but.
And you blew it! You blew it! You blew it! You blew it! You had it all and you blew it!
That's why they'll never be forgiven. Never. At least with us. All right. Next is LT from NC. He says, holy Sergio Leone. I really like this episode. From the spaghetti western music cues when John stepped out into the street with the tumbleweeds to the teaser at the end. I have to say that as much as I complained about not really liking any of the first season crew, I'm becoming a John Dory fan. His interaction with June, the look on his face when her rifle ran dry, to the last shot of the sundown. So, stop you right there. Now, John and June, fourth season. So they're not part of the original crew. Just, I know, LT, you joined in later, so may not have realized that, but they were not part of the show before last season. So they have an idea of the borders of all the roadblocks, and we know that whoever set the perimeter is trying to protect something. I know it was for effect, and it was dark, but I wish someone would have put a light on the kid in the back of the van. It was a little too dark for me, and I get that they wanted to build some suspense, but come on. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is, it's a lot. It's a lot. All right, let's move on.
Yeah, Glennis from Toronto says, I really enjoyed this excellent episode, which had a good dose of a little bit of everything with, and continues on saying, the action of John and June shooting those walkers in a town complete with tumbleweeds. I agree. The emotion of June convincing Dwight that he needs to have hope and he is worthy of finding Sherry and to continue on his quest to find her. June talked him down from shooting himself. Actually, yeah, that was an interesting scene. I like that. And June also helping John to treasure his time with June and not second guess himself, which is cutting into their time together. The emotional emptiness of loss when Alicia spoke to those kids about losing her mom and brother. I think they could still bring back Madison. But I suppose that's wishful thinking, and we all have that wishful thinking. Damn these kids in this apocalypse world. Are they ever good? Where did they learn to string up walkers by their intestines? Or intestines? Still think that's a savior trait. I do agree. I wonder where they learned it from. They're looking as if they don't believe that the group is really just trying to help them. I suppose in this world, they think everyone has ulterior motives. So I wonder who has control over them, or they're just warning anybody to keep out because of those riot-geared mystery group that have Althea. Maybe they encountered them.
Yeah, I wondered that myself. If that, like, they know who they are and maybe they're...
And they don't want to say.
Yeah.
She continues on saying, it's nice having Dwight in Fear of the Walking Dead, and the dynamic between Morgan and Dwight, I'm sure, is going to be further explored. At least I hope it will be, since Morgan cut Dwight off from explaining himself, which I wholly agree. Anyway, I think... what Dwight did by helping the survivors and going against Negan redeemed him in a way, though Denise's death started the series of events of Daryl, Rosita, Glenn, and Michonne being captured by the Saviors, and of course resulting in the lineup in front of Negan. We know Daryl will never forgive what Dwight did to Denise, and Dwight caused Daryl not to trust people when Dwight and Sherry stole his motorcycle from him. When he'd offered help and Alexandria to them, and then later Daryl, Abe, and Sasha probably wouldn't have met up and blown up the Saviors on the road with a rocket propelled grenade. Wow, she got deep cuts. But yeah, I do agree. There's a lot of story back there that leads to the original Walking Dead episodes and seasons that lead to Dwight, to who he is and where he came to be. And if things change, and this would be almost like a Marvel comic where it's like, what if this happened, you know? But we don't know, but this is how the story is going on, and this is how we have to watch it. Yeah. So
I just hope they do go further, because if it's just all like, oh, that's Morgan's friend, and then they continue on to their other adventures, then it's like, oh, come on.
Yeah. Well, it the way Morgan actually shut it down was just basically, we've all done things. This is a new, we're starting over. And kind of basically that's how Morgan is. He is starting over, and it's like, hey, these are my friends, and yeah, well, they accept you.
You know, Morgan in the beginning though was like saying, hey, I'm going back to Alexandria with this group, and was like, hey, you should come with me. So I mean, I would think that they would want to know more of what's outside this world of their little, you know, area. So that's my only thing. I hope there's a little bit more tidbits to just, even if they're not even going to go there, just to be like, oh, how was your place? You know, and then he could say, oh, it was a, you know, hellhole. And, you know,
yeah, there was this guy, Negan, who kind of reminded me of Henry Rollins. And yeah.
But it's still new people.
New people. I like new people.
I hope she gets to say that.
Yeah, exactly. She'll be like, oh, new people. Oh, Dwight, hi.
No, I just hope she lives long enough to say
that. Yeah, I was going to say.
I hope so, too. I really like that character.
Yeah. She might say, new people. I hate new people.
like, I'm done. I don't want your stories anymore.
Yeah.
All right, Mark, we're done with listener feedback. So thank you, listeners, for getting in your feedback this week. You can start us on our own notes.
Well, basically, since we haven't seen Sherry, is she the new camp counselor for the new freaky kids at Camp Blood? Because honestly, come on. It's like, those are savior tactics. She was part of the Saviors at some point, so she knew certain things, and we can't find Sherry. She's like, hold on, kids. I'm going to take you in. This is my wing. Yeah. Hold on. You need to do this, 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 and this. And I'll take care of putting the heads up there.
But, well, behind every kids, there's always a mom.
Yeah, maybe it is Sherry. I'll cut it there. But it's a possible thing.
It would make things make a little more sense with how they're able to do what they're doing. So,
yeah. Is that all you have?
Yeah, that's all I got.
Kyle, do you have anything else?
Yeah, we pretty much have, you know, everybody's touched on basically the same.
Well, one thing I wanted to address, because I have seen this on the web and on another podcast, where there's some confusion or some like thoughts of suspension of disbelief when it comes for down to Dwight's search for Sherry. So let's take a minute and just explain what we saw. So let's take it back to season 8, episode 16. Well, actually, before that, when Sherry leaves, which I think was in season 7, actually, she leaves a note for Dwight, and it's basically that she would leave a sign. And it sounds like this is something that they did before. So when he leaves, he knows to go to this particular cottage or something that they had or that they went to. And when he's there, he finds a note from Sherry basically telling him where she was headed. And I think it was like, I think she said something like honeymoon or something like that in there.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. So that kind of led him down the journey. So we assume that he started, you know, going west to somewhere, you know, maybe Georgia. You know, maybe it was in the mountains of Georgia or something, or maybe down in North Carolina, or, you know, who knows. That led him to wherever he was. And he gets there. There must have been another note telling him where she was going. So that led to some other place where he found another note. And at some point, he probably, wherever she was or whatever, she left a vehicle registration behind of, you know, and they always have like year, make, model, color of vehicle. And it said something like, you know, straight down 30 or something like that. I saw the number 30. So he went down 30 and had spent a long time looking for this car, which obviously was, you know, some kind of minivan, probably the same year, make, model, and color of the one that June and John were driving. So is it hard to believe? Well, yes and no. I mean, I could totally see something like that go on. Now, it's also very believable that he could have missed some clues, you know, and that basically he's never going to find her. But I could also see somehow he would find her. Now, what he's got to find is that next car. And if he finds the next car, then we know that she's going to survive. But I don't know. Do you think he's going to find her?
I think eventually, yeah.
I think so too.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So it does lead to some kind of merging, I think. I think Dwight is going to help bring, and this whole, you know, storyline behind who kidnapped who took Althea, I think that's going to lead to more of the converging of the two shows. And, you know, that's all I have to say. I really enjoyed this episode, but I also see why some people, yourself included, Kyle, why there was some things that, it put it this way, if you weren't willing to go there with your suspension of disbelief, yeah, I could see why it might have, you might not have bought it, but I went for it. I was not too positive on the first two episodes, but I really loved this one. I thought it was the best one since probably the Laura episode of season 4. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, definitely. I have a little bit of a theory, and I don't know if you want to hear it now.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so let's say
possible spoilers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Possible, but, you know, this is my theory. Come on, this is not written in comic form, Robert.
It's not spoilers.
This is purely speculation.
Exactly.
We have no knowledge of the events of this show. So, go ahead.
Maybe Sherry did meet up with these kids, taught these kids these tactics. Maybe they have been doing all this time, and she was the camp counselor of, you know, Camp Blood or Sleepaway Camp for these kids, and taught them everything they needed to do to survive from the threat of these people in riot gear or whatever it is, or as I call them, the Commonwealth, but maybe she was taken by these people, and that's why these kids are still surviving on their own at this point, and that's why they're afraid, and eventually they meet up, eventually, at said Commonwealth.
It's
a long, drawn-out theory, but, you know, it's just me thinking in the mind of Mr. Robert Kirkman and Scott M. Gimple. Well,
yeah. it would be, like, some common thread with the time jump and stuff that you could somehow make things connect.
Yeah.
It's possible. We know that there's supposed to be, you know, something tying these two shows together. I did hear on Talking Dead, and this could be a spoiler, so it's a very vague spoiler, but that something big's going to happen in episode 5.
Really?
Yeah, that was something I mentioned on the one episode of Talking Dead that we got. So I don't know specifics there, but yeah. So anyway, all right. So let's move on to our news, ratings, and info. And all I have is ratings.
What the hell is happening?
I have no idea.
All right. Well, I am pleased to say ratings were up this week. I was actually surprised. Fear got a 0.54 in the 18 to 49 with 1.756 million viewers. And this is up from 0.51 last week. And 1.687 million viewers. So, I mean, it wasn't up that much, but it is, nearly 100,000 viewers and, hundreds of points. But I mean, 51 to 54, that's, not bad.
Yeah. No, any increase is good. Yeah.
And, I didn't really pull anything out about this, but there is one thing to say, and that is that just to alert you guys to it, I don't know if you watched it, but there is a YouTube video and on the AMC app, a video about Dwight's return. So they've been pretty stingy on the kind of like inside the episode stuff that they've done so far this season of Fear, but they had a pretty good longer, I'd say close to 10 minutes, maybe not quite 10 minutes, but a good video about the was with, I think, it's mostly Lenny James, Austin Emilio, and the showrunners, talking about bringing Dwight in and how they're excited to have him in here. And, a lot of the things that we were talking about, like how he's a good fit and how, telling that story. Showed little clips, of course, of The Walking Dead with Dwight, how he first appeared. So it's really good. I would recommend, having a watch of that. So last thing I had is not really news to this show, but I did notice a little advertisement that said that the last season of Preacher returns Sunday, August 4th. So I wondered, could they be doing this again with Fear and end up having it so that Preacher is in the slot of Nosferatu in the second half, which I don't know. Have either of you guys watched Nosferatu? No,
I watched part of an episode, and it actually intrigued me, so eventually I'll probably stumble upon it. I have the AMC Premiere app.
Yeah.
And they have all the episodes on it. So.
Yeah. It's actually, if you have the app, you can actually watch all 10 episodes. I noticed that, but I haven't done it yet. I haven't gone back to watch it. I watched some, sort of half watching parts of the first episode, and it didn't intrigue me. But then again, I've heard good things about it. So at some point,
it's got that like weird Wraith element, for like kind of like a twisty thing for kids, like a almost like a dark children's story, so
All right.
I'll have to check it out.
All right. That's it for this week. So, Kyle, why don't you tell people how to interact with us?
Yes. If you'd like to interact with us, we encourage you to follow us on Twitter at WalkingDeadGSM. To submit your theories and feedback, most people post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, and you can find us there at facebook.com/groups/WalkingDeadGSM. We'd like to encourage you to use our email address as well, and you can email us at WalkingDeadGSM@gmail.com. There's also a feedback forum at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, and it is now functioning again, so you can send text or audio there, or you can find our SpeakPipe widget. Or call 304-837-2278. And to support us, the best way you can is by subscribing to us in Apple Podcasts, or you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple. And while you're there, give us a rating or review, because we really want one. Find out all the other ways to support GSM at goldenspiralmedia.com/support.
So, this week, we still have that Nana visitor interview to come out that hopefully will be out by the time this episode is released, or at least, like, you know, maybe a couple of days after it's partially edited, but we haven't finished it, so we have to do that before we can get it out. Hashtag Ruthie is delaying. Anyway. But we should have that out, and we are finally recording our season 2 roundtable Saturday. So we should have an episode 2 to listen to in the very foreseeable future. You can go to StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast.com or to join the Facebook group, facebook.com/group/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. Both this and the Star Trek Discovery podcast can be found at goldenspiralmedia.com. So check us out. Mark?
Yeah, you could listen to me on Panels to Pixels on the Next Level Podcast Radio Network. Steve and I, well, this past weekend we were supposed to record. I couldn't do it because I was sick for 2 days out of the 3 I was off. We had a binge watch. I actually did it yesterday. On the day I was feeling better, and I watched Jessica Jones, and we will be dropping this coming Sunday episodes 1 and 2 on Panels to Pixels of Jessica Jones season 3. So be prepared for that. And I will be podcasting more this week, actually. So there'll be a filler episode for a review for Godzilla King of the Monsters. And we will continue on with Jessica Jones. So look forward to those podcasts to come out. And that's pretty much it.
Nice. I'm starting to watch Jessica Jones, but I've only gotten through the first and second episode. So I'll be...
The season 3?
Yeah.
It gets better. And when you get to episode 8, oh my.
Okay. Well, then this is going to take me a while to get through it.
Yeah. It's really good. I'm sad to see it go, but, Steve didn't like I can't say he didn't like it. He found it very like, what's going on here? And, you'll hear it on the podcast. Okay. It's very intriguing.
Cool.
Intriguing.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So our next episode is aptly titled Skidmark. That's season 5, episode 4. We don't know who has written or directed it. We don't have a description, but I think it's going to involve a cat. Just a little hint there. So until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Kyle.
And I'm Mark.
This is Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.